Indonesia's first female central bank chief signals relief, not confidence on rupiah. Indonesia's rupiah strengthened 0.79% against the dollar on news that President Prabowo Subianto nominated Bank Indonesia Deputy Destri Damayanti for the central bank's top job. A market reaction that says more about the depth of investor anxiety than the strength of the appointment itself. The August 10 nomination, announced by State Secretary Prasetyo Hadi, elevates the institution's second-in-command to replace Perry Warjio, who resigned last month citing personal reasons after 8 years at the helm. The rupiah closed at 17,755 per dollar, up 142 points from the prior session, but still within striking distance of the psychologically significant 18,000 threshold it breached in June. For institutional capital watching the world's fourth most populous nation, the nomination is a relief trade, not a conviction buy. Damayanti, a former Bank Mandiri chief economist and Citibank veteran with board experience at the Indonesia Deposit Insurance Corporation, brings a credible CV and institutional continuity at a moment when both are in short supply. Her confirmation by the House of Representatives is assured given Prabowo's legislative majority, making her Indonesia's first permanent female central bank governor. But the true test, as Permata Bank chief economist Joshua Pardede framed it, will come after confirmation, whether coordination with the finance ministry crosses into subordination. The stakes extend beyond Indonesia. Across the emerging market complex, fiscal populism is colliding with monetary orthodoxy, and the institutions designed to referee that clash are under stress. Brazil's President Lula da Silva unveiled a foreign policy pivot on August 10 that prioritizes South-South cooperation through BRICS and Mercosur, explicitly aimed at reducing dependence on the United States amid visa revocations and tariff pressure. The parallel is instructive. Large, resource-rich emerging economies are testing how far they can stretch fiscal envelopes without triggering capital flight, and central bank independence is the canary in that coal mine. The Warjio exit and the credibility gap Perry Warjio's resignation could not have been timed worse. Since taking office in October 2024, Prabowo has pursued an interventionist economic agenda headlined by a multi-billion-dollar free meal program, expanded state involvement in resource extraction, and the September 2025 firing of Finance Minister Sri Mulyani Indrawati, a figure synonymous with Indonesia's post-crisis fiscal discipline. The policy mix pushed the deficit toward its 3% of gross domestic product legal ceiling and unsettled investors who had priced in continuity. Reuters reported that Warjio's departure followed a major disagreement with Finance Minister Purbia Yudhisadewa over using central bank liquidity to fund Prabowo's fiscal expansion, though Warjio himself cited personal reasons. The optics were damaging. A central bank governor with 3 years left on his term walking away mid-mandate, amid speculation that Prabowo might install his nephew, Thomas Juwandono, whom he appointed as a deputy governor in February. Moody's and Fitch downgraded their outlook on Indonesia in March 2026, with Fitch citing increasing policy uncertainty and erosion of Indonesia's policy, mixed consistency and credibility, as well as growing centralization of policymaking authority. The rating agencies are not alone in their concern. MSCI threatened in early 2026 to downgrade Indonesia to frontier market status over stock market transparency issues, with a final determination due in November. Damayanti's dilemma, independence or accommodation coordinating economic affairs, Minister Erlangga Hartarto said Damayanti's appointment would preserve Bank Indonesia's trajectory and independence, noting her tenure across more than one term as senior deputy governor and good communication with the government. That last phrase is the crux of investor anxiety. Good communication can mean healthy fiscal monetary coordination, or it can mean a central bank that clears rate decisions with the finance ministry first. Pardede's warning is precise. Markets will draw a sharp distinction between coordination and subordination, and risk premiums will rise if Bank Indonesia cuts rates prematurely or provides liquidity to fund social programs. The rupiah's modest rally on the nomination suggests traders are relieved Prabowo chose continuity over nepotism, but the currency remains fragile, having hit record lows earlier this year. The institutional erosion is tangible. Sri Mulyani's September 2025 dismissal removed the cabinet's most credible fiscal hawk, and her replacement, Saidwa, is untested in crisis management. Wargeo's exit compounds the problem. Indonesia has now lost both fiscal and monetary anchors within a year. Damayanti's appointment offers a near-term stabilizer, but her working relationship with Saidwa, described as strong, cuts both ways. The emerging market pattern, populism meets the policy trilemma Indonesia, is not an outlier. Brazil's August 10 foreign policy announcement, which prioritizes BRICS financing mechanisms and South American energy integration, signals a similar calculation. Diversify away from dollar dependence and Western capital markets, even if it means accepting higher borrowing costs in the transition. Lula's government aims to strengthen multilateral financing through BRICS and reform the IMF and World Bank to increase developing countries' influence, a direct challenge to the Bretton Woods architecture that has underpinned emerging market capital flows since 1945. The common thread is the policy trilemma playing out in real time. Large emerging economies want fiscal space for populist programs, exchange rate stability, and some version of monetary policy autonomy. Economic theory says you can have two of three. Indonesia and Brazil are both testing whether geopolitical realignment and South-South capital flows can bend that constraint. The answer so far is no. Indonesia's rupiah is down sharply year-to-date despite Bank Indonesia holding rates steady, and Brazil faces growing U.S. pressure through tariffs and diplomatic sanctions. The BRICS financing mechanisms Brazil is betting on remain undercapitalized and unproven for large-scale infrastructure needs, while Indonesia's fiscal position deteriorates as commodity revenues soften. What the data shows, debt, deficits, and the dollar bind Indonesia's fiscal deficit is approaching its 3% statutory ceiling, propelled by Prabowo's social spending and state-led investment push. The country's debt-to-gross domestic product ratio, while moderate by emerging market standards, is rising at a moment when global rates remain elevated and the dollar strong. The rupiah's slide past 18,000 per dollar in June represented a 15% depreciation from early 2025 levels, raising import costs and complicating inflation management. The MSCI Frontier Market Threat crystallizes the risk. A downgrade would trigger index exclusion, forcing passive funds to liquidate Indonesian equity holdings regardless of fundamental value. The market cap impact could run into tens of billions of dollars, further pressuring the rupiah and tightening financial conditions. MSCI's November decision will be a pivotal moment for Indonesian assets. Brazil's playbook offers a parallel case study. Lula's South-South pivot comes as the U.S. revoked the Brazilian ambassador's visa and imposed tariffs on key exports, tangible evidence that diversification attempts carry near-term costs. The BRICS expansion and Mercosur deepening are long-term structural plays, but markets price quarterly earnings and six-month rate paths. The gap between geopolitical ambition and market reality is where currency crises are born. The Plaquemium view the Damayanti nomination is a tactical win in a strategic retreat. Indonesia's institutional credibility has been eroding since Prabowo took office, and the market is pricing in a slow-motion subordination of monetary policy to fiscal priorities. The rupiah's 0.79% rally on the announcement is not evidence of confidence. It is evidence of how low expectations had fallen. Investors were bracing for a crony appointment. They got a technocrat instead. That is relief, not conviction. The second-order risk is what happens when the next external shock hits. Indonesia has burned through its policy buffers. The finance minister is untested. The central bank governor is unconfirmed. The fiscal deficit is maxed out, and the currency is brittle. The MSCI decision in November could be the trigger, or it could be a commodity price correction, a Fed policy surprise, or a China slowdown. The point is Indonesia now has less capacity to absorb volatility than at any point since the 2020 pandemic crisis. Brazil's simultaneous pivot toward BRICS and away from dollar dependence is the early stage version of what Indonesia may be forced into if capital flight accelerates. Lula is making a calculated bet that South-South financing can replace Western capital markets over a multi-year horizon, accepting near-term pain for long-term autonomy. Indonesia is not there yet, but the trajectory is concerning. If the rupiah breaks decisively through 18,000 and stays there, Damayanti will face intense pressure to cut rates or provide liquidity, regardless of inflation dynamics. That is when the market's distinction between coordination and subordination will be tested. From a portfolio construction standpoint, Indonesia remains uninvestable at current spreads. The political risk premium is mispriced because the market is still anchoring to Indonesia's pre-Prabowo reputation for technocratic competence. That anchor is dragging. We would need to see three conditions before revisiting exposure. Damayanti confirmed and asserting explicit independence in her first policy decision. The MSCI review resolved without downgrade, and fiscal policy moderation signaled through a credible medium-term consolidation path. None of those are in place today. The Brazil comparison is instructive for another reason. It shows how quickly emerging market darlings can become distressed opportunities when fiscal populism collides with external financing constraints. Indonesia entered 2024 as a consensus overweight in M portfolios, riding the nickel boom and benefiting from China plus one manufacturing diversification. 2 years later, it is fighting to avoid a frontier market downgrade and a currency crisis. That repricing is not complete. The rupiah at 17,755 still implies too much optimism about policy normalization and too little recognition of the institutional damage already done. For private equity and long-duration investors, the opportunity set in Indonesia has shifted from growth capital to distressed credit. If the MSCI downgrade happens and triggers forced selling, there will be high-quality assets available at dislocated prices, particularly in consumer and infrastructure sectors, where government contracts provide revenue visibility. But that is a 2027 story, contingent on stabilization that is not yet visible. The 2026 trade is risk-off. So what? The institutional erosion trade Damayanti's nomination buys Indonesia time, but it does not solve the underlying problem. A president pursuing fiscal expansion beyond the economy's capacity to absorb it without external financing stress. The central bank can choose to accommodate or resist, but neither path avoids pain. Accommodation means inflation and currency depreciation. Resistance means higher rates, slower growth, and political conflict. The emerging market playbook for this scenario is well established. Credibility is lost slowly, then all at once. Turkey in 2018, Argentina in 2019, and Egypt in 2022 all followed similar arcs. Indonesia is not there yet, but the warning signs are accumulating faster than the market is pricing. The Damayanti appointment is a speed bump, not a turnaround. For institutional allocators, the signal is clear. Reduce Indonesia exposure, hedge currency risk, and wait for a genuine policy reset that includes fiscal consolidation and explicit central bank independence guarantees. That reset is not coming before the MSCI decision in November, and probably not before Indonesia faces a more acute external financing crisis. The current rally is a gift to lighten positions, not an entry point. The parallel story in Brazil underscores a broader theme. Large emerging economies are choosing sovereignty over market access, betting that geopolitical realignment and regional integration can substitute for Western capital. That may prove correct over a decade, but the transition period will be volatile and expensive. Indonesia is earlier in that journey than Brazil, but the direction is set. Damayanti's task is to manage the speed of descent, not to reverse course. Markets that understand that will position accordingly.